most hackathons don't expect you to come with your own team, and they actually encourage you to find some new people at the event, make some new friends, and it is a great opportunity to do that.
Hey, and welcome back to the What the Tech podcast. My name is Christopher, and today I'm joined with Daniel Sabarov, Ryan Lee, and Tim Gubski. The group recently took first place in the Princeton Hackathon, and we had a great conversation about what hackathons are, how you can take part, what the hackathon they took part in was about, and what their idea was. All right, here's the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the What the Tech podcast. It's Christopher here, and I'm joined by Daniel, Ryan, and Tim. These are three students, one of which is at the University of Calgary right now. They recently took first place at a Princeton hackathon. So we wanted to have a great conversation with them and learn more about how they're doing and what a hackathon is and what their solution was. I'll just start off by asking you guys, what is a hackathon?
So a hackathon is usually a social event where a bunch of people in tech will like get together for a competition, and it'll usually be a sprint, whether it be one day, 2 days, maybe like up to 3 days of just working on a project together, trying to come up with a solution or solve some sort of problem based on what the theme of the hackathon is, right? It could be solving a problem like in the city, or improving something about a problem that's prevalent in society. Or maybe it could be like a game jam. I don't know if those count as hackathons, but basically it's where a bunch of people come together to try and come up with a solution given a kind of short time frame and see what they can come up with.
Cool. Yeah, no, that sounds great. What is kind of one of the big benefits out of doing a hackathon? It's obvious that they're really popular. What kind of things would a computer science student who's listening to this right now, why would they want to take part in a hackathon?
Well, for one, you can really just use your skills that you learned in school to actually try to apply them. And when you actually apply something, it ends up being a lot more, you'll find out that what you're learning is a lot more useful than just like sitting there plugging away at your computer, or finishing an assignment. You're creating something that you maybe actually want to make. And because you want to make it, your experience is actually elevated, your work and the stuff you learn is elevated, and you actually kind of figure out what you're doing and whether or not you actually like what you're learning. Because for me, when I go to my classes, I hear my professors talking about data structures and all these random terms that I like can barely care about. But then when I actually have to use them, it's a lot more fun, which is why a hackathon is just really great. And also test your ingenuity, right? Because you sit there and you have to think of a method to like actually solve a problem. And that's kind of different from an assignment where you just kind of sit there and you just do whatever you're told.
Yeah, I want to add a little bit to that. I think not only do you get to like apply all the skills that you already know, I think hackathons are also a great learning opportunity for figuring out stuff that, you know, never crossed your path before, but allows you to figure out some new skills that you can acquire during hackathon. For instance, I was at Hack the North in September, and just from like the team that I teamed up with, there were three guys that I didn't know beforehand, but through them we kind of created an app that did some augmented reality stuff for like iOS apps, and I like entirely learned how to use Swift and like AR Core and AR Kit over the weekend. So not only can you apply the stuff you already know, it's a great opportunity to meet other people and also just learn a ton with them. So extremely enriching experience, and it can be a ton of fun too.
Oh yeah, I can testify to that. With Hack Princeton, I had never worked with React before, like React.js, but part of our project, we wanted to make a web page for it where you could interact with the app, and ended up learning a lot of React and how React works. So went from knowing absolutely nothing about it to actually being able to spin up a web page. And later, I kind of applied that knowledge that I got from Hack Princeton with React to rework my own website, like my own portfolio site, and completely migrate it to a React framework. So yeah, a lot of the stuff that you do in a hackathon isn't just stuff you've learned before and you're applying now. It's stuff that you're learning on the spot and that you can then apply to whatever you want to apply it to later.
Yeah, definitely. They sound like very fulfilling extracurricular activities, and they're kind of in short bursts, so it's kind of low time commitment, I guess. Daniel, I'll pose this question to you specifically because I know you're a UCalgary student. What classes have you taken so far that made you feel, okay, I'm ready to apply these skills in a hackathon, and which skills really came in handy?
In terms of classes I felt applied most, it would probably be the introductory courses. So in computer science in the first year, you're usually going to take computer science 231, which is learning about or programming in Python. And then you're also going to take computer science 233, which is going to be programming with Java. And so you kind of learn the basics of programming with a really, really simple language with Python. And then you move on to more object-oriented stuff when you move on to Java. And so a lot of the prerequisite knowledge that I got from those classes, I also knew some programming beforehand, but a lot of the stuff that was covered there helped me learn kind of JavaScript and React on the spot. And without kind of that prerequisite experience, I don't know if I would have been able to perform and really help the team out as much as I was able to during the hackathon's duration.
Okay, great. That's really good to hear that there was a few classes that were really beneficial in your hackathon experience. I'll take it more broad now. The Princeton Hackathon, what was the theme behind it? What were you guys trying to solve? And was there a reason you specifically picked the Princeton Hackathon to take part in?
So, okay, I'll answer this one. So pretty much the Princeton Hackathon is actually a bit different from some of the other ones I've seen. They actually posted their themes a lot earlier. So we saw that the themes, I believe, were art, gaming, sustainability. And I think one of them might have been education, but I don't really remember because we really only chose to deal with a few of them, which the main one being sustainability, right? Because our project ended up being a wildfire detection system. But more, we'll talk about that more later. So yeah, so those were the themes that we chose from. And we ended up going to Hack Princeton mainly because Tim was there. So we found out that they gave bursaries for a bit of a longer travel. So we ended up getting some money back for traveling from Canada to Princeton. And so yeah, that's why we chose Hack Princeton.
Also a good excuse to go visit Tim.
Yeah, that's one of the big things. I've been trying to get a lot of friends from back home to come visit me, and they're always like, oh, it's expensive and it's far. But, you know, when a hackathon covers half the cost, it's a lot easier to convince them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Is that common that hackathons will cover your costs or at least part of the costs? Or, Daniel, was there like a fund at U of C that you could apply to get some money back to attend this extracurricular activity?
I didn't apply for it, but I believe the student union here at the university actually does offer or might offer partial reimbursements or reimbursements for traveling to events for the purpose of like education or enriching your knowledge and stuff like that. So anyone who's kind of interested in maybe, oh, if you want to go travel somewhere for a hackathon, look on the student union's website to see if they have anything regarding that. But in this case, it was Hack Princeton that offered to kind of refund part of the travel costs if you decided to fly into Princeton or maybe, I don't know, take land travel like train or drive. It depends, I guess, on the hackathon if they cover travel costs. If they have like a lot of people coming in, so if it's like super international hackathon, they might, or it might be more likely that they reimburse travel. But if it's a more local hackathon, it'd be much less likely.
Yeah, no, that certainly makes sense. Very cool that you guys were able to travel for this one. A follow-up question, I guess. The hackathon you mentioned was focusing on a few themes, but one of them was sustainability. And you mentioned you created a system to detect forest fires. How did you come up with that idea? And why did you think that was important to solve?
So we were mostly looking at the categories that the hackathon had available. And they did post like Ryan said, all the awards ahead of time. So the main areas that we were kind of looking at was the like sustainability. And they also did actually have a section for hardware. So we kind of came in with the approach of, okay, let's think of ideas and try to see if we can tackle as many categories at the same time. And then one thing that helped us out with our brainstorming for ideas was one of the clubs that I'm in at Princeton, Princeton Racing Electric. We build like electric Formula One cars. For that club, I had very conveniently just got a bunch of like microcontroller parts. So it's like a couple ESP32s. And while we were talking about sustainability stuff and like project brainstorming, Ryan came up with the idea of like something to do with forest fires, given that, you know, from, in Calgary, like BC is very close by and there's a lot of forest fires going on there. And then more American centered, there's all the wildfires in California and all the wildfires in Australia. It's just been a problem that was really big recently. So wildfires was on our mind. And then the fact that I'd gotten all of this hardware the couple days prior kind of led us to quickly come up with an interesting idea that we just decided to run with.
Okay. So just for anyone listening who doesn't know, what is a microcontroller? How does it work? Why does it work? What is it used for?
Yeah, for sure. So basically it's like a multi-purpose little tool that you can use to program and like play with circuits to get whatever desired functionality you want. So rather than just having like a circuit that's built for one given function, like a thermostat or something, microcontrollers allow you to plug in a bunch of different elements, read values from like little sensors, and, you know, have outputs come out of them as well. And then you can program them using code to integrate whatever kind of logic that you want into the microcontroller. So one that's more common that many people might have heard of before is like an Arduino microcontroller or like a Raspberry Pi. The one we were using is much closer to the ESP. The ESP32 is what we used, which is very close to the Arduino. It's just slightly smaller and comes with built-in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi functionality, which was very important to our project. And when we explain how it works, like it was one of the big reasons why we were kind of able to come up with our idea in the first place.
Okay, perfect. That's a great explanation. Thank you so much for that. And just on that note, what was your solution and how does it work, as you mentioned?
So to start with, we were thinking about just forest fires in general, like how do they start and what do we really need to do to be able to create like a good product to actually solve the problem. So the first thing that we came up with was just, what if we like put stuff everywhere inside of the forest that could kind of just detect where it is? But then we came up with like a lot of problems that, like, first of all, how do we transmit the information back when there's not really any cell phone towers or anything out that far in the wilderness? So the main thing that we came up with was like a nodal mesh using the ESP32 units. And so so what the nodal mesh is pretty much you have a bunch of nodes set up all around the forest, let's say, and each node will get activated if there's a fire detected nearby. When that fire is detected nearby, it'll pretty much like send a signal to all surrounding nodes, so all of the nodes that are around it, and it'll tell those nodes that, oh yes, there's a fire at this location. And then all of those nodes will also send out a signal to the nodes that are near it, and it'll just all kind of travel around until it reaches our master node, which has a like Wi-Fi capability, and that node will transmit that information onto the website, and then the website will also send a text message to your phone. Is kind of the idea. So in actuality, this was more of a prototype than an actual, like our actual design, because in our actual design, we wouldn't be using ESP32. Like we wouldn't be using a microcontroller. We'd be actually using a dedicated hardware unit. We would have a separate power supply using like solar power, and rather than using Bluetooth for our node to node communication, we would actually use LoRa, so long distance radio frequency. And that way we could cover a lot more area with fewer units, because with Bluetooth, you have about a tenth of the distance that radio frequency could cover.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll add a little bit to that. So the main thing with the ESP32s that we had is they had low energy Bluetooth, which allowed us to have them communicate over like a decently large distance. So for the prototype, this was still enough. So they would be able to communicate within like 1600 feet of each other. And the idea is that using this like mesh network, you're able to cover a nearly infinite amount of area as long as you have one of these little ESP32 nodes set up within range of another one, and you can kind of chain them together.
Okay.
So for our actual project, for our demo, we had three ESP32s that we set up such that we had one master node that was connected to Wi-Fi and then two that were spaced further apart. So if you were to trigger a fire, which at the actual venue we weren't able to do with actual fires, that we had little buttons set up. So if you were to activate one of them, that signal would be relayed down the chain until it reached the master node, which would then alert whoever needs to be alerted about that wildfire.
Very clever solution. Just to start off with, that was a lot of information. So how does your solution detect the fires? I know you mentioned that the microcontrollers have a lot of sensors and then it passes the information to code and then that's processed, but how does yours specifically detect the fires and what does it do once it has that information?
Yeah, so the main methods that we like theorized of, there were a couple ways that we came up that it would work in theory, such as like using infrared cameras to look at heat signatures, or using smoke detection. For our final demo, we didn't have access to a ton of equipment, so we kind of made do with what we had. There was like a little hardware supplier at the hackathon, which a lot of hackathons do have like little hardware rental booths that you can go to and like take out equipment. They had these little temperature sensors, so we ended up using those so that if the temperature rose above a certain threshold, it would activate it and say, oh, there's a fire here. This isn't the most rigorous method, but for the hackathon, it was a good proof of concept. And then because actually getting the sensors up to, you know, flaming temperatures wasn't super feasible, we had like a little override button that would just like, if you clicked it, it would say, okay, pretend there's a fire so that during the demo, we can show what it would actually work like.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something there. So we actually did do a lot of research into how we could actually detect fires. Smoke detection, as it turns out, is really only good inside like an indoor type of, like inside indoors pretty much. Because when you're in the outdoors inside of a forest, the smoke can't really be detected by a smoke like alarm. So which is why infrared cameras would be the way to go if this were actually to be created, not just with a prototype, but with an actual like, if we were to actually make it.
Okay. Another question I have is, in this node relaying system, what were to happen if one of the nodes went down? Was there a backup node involved, or did you guys consider that possibility?
Yeah. So since each node, all it does is it basically duplicates the any detection signal that it receives. What it'll do is it'll send that one signal in a radius around it, and any of the other child nodes will pick it, or not even child, also the master node, will also pick it up within that radius. So what you can do is you can have multiple nodes within the radius of that node. So if one goes down, another one is still picking it up and relaying it. So you can have kind of the saturation within the radius of another node, so that if one or two or however many go down, there are still some that are up that can continue to relay the message. Additionally, each node would kind of send a ping every once in a while to say, hey, I'm still up. I'm still sending messages, kind of detecting if there's going to be a fire. And if it stops relaying messages within a certain amount of time, a message will be transmitted from nearby nodes that previously detected it that would say, we'll say, hey, something's wrong. And they're going to send pings saying, hey, this node is now down or it's not responding. Maybe come check up on it. But for as long as there's more than one node within the radius of whichever node is sending the signal, then the signal will continue to be transmitted because there are other supporting nodes that can continue to transmit it in lieu of the missing node.
Okay. Yeah, so the network's fairly redundant. So even if some nodes go down, they can take like an alternative path to the master node.
Perfect. That sounds great. And it sounds like you've thought through it. Just taking it more broader now, if I was a student or if there is a student listening and they have not attended their first hackathon, what kind of tips would you give to them? Should they be feeling intimidated? How do they get over that intimidation if they're feeling that way? If they don't know anyone and it's a team hackathon, how do you go about finding people for a hackathon?
Yeah, I can take this one. So for this hackathon, you know, me, Daniel, and Ryan all knew each other previously. So we kind of came into the hackathon with the intention of teaming. But I've been at hackathons before where I didn't know anyone who was going into it beforehand. So I kind of just teamed up with some random people that I found at the event. So most hackathons don't expect you to come with your own team, and they actually encourage you to you know, find some new people at the event, make some new friends, and it is a great opportunity to do that. So a lot of hackathons will have like a Discord channel or a Slack channel where there'll be like one of the channels there for finding teams, and you can just kind of like message people and be like, hey, do you want to team up? I have this cool idea. And you can, you know, try to put together a team with various skills. Additionally, if you like, there are certain skills that are really good to have when you go to hackathons, but not by no means they're not necessary, right? So you don't need to go into the hackathon knowing how to work with microcontrollers or how to, you know, be a full stack web developer or know 15 programming languages. You can just come in with a cool idea, or even no idea at all. You just got to come into the event with a positive attitude. And even if you don't come out winning, you know, all the awards, you're going to come out learning something new. And that's honestly the best part of the hackathon. Having figured something out during the event, met some new people, and just trying to scrap something together, or, you know, hack something together over that 36-hour event, is kind of like the best part.
Yeah, I was just going to say, everyone at hackathons is super chill. Like, people love talking about their ideas, what they're currently working on. It's everyone, even though I guess it's a competition, right? Everyone's competing against one another. Everybody loves talking to one another about their ideas and the kind of concepts they've come up with, because it's really, really rewarding to see something that you've made or something that you're making really pay off, and seeing others be interested in your ideas. And being interested in others' ideas is also like a really fantastic feeling when you attend these hackathons.
Sweet. Yeah, that's great to hear. And I'm sure a lot of students listening will definitely want to take part after hearing this podcast. When you guys are, you know, trying to find a hackathon to go to, where do you look to?
There is a website that hosts or that hosts about a bunch of hackathons. It's called DevPost. So a lot of hackathons use this as a kind of medium to advertise themselves, to advertise to either local groups or to a wider audience. And you can find hackathons from Canada to the US to India and to all over the world. Some of them are obviously, they're meant for only local competitors, but some are looking for kind of people all around the world to come and attend the event. You can also look at local sources. Universities sometimes host hackathons. Like, for example, Calgary is actually having one coming up this weekend in a couple of days, Calgary Hacks. You can kind of ask around the community, ask if anyone knows about any upcoming hackathons or events, and you can maybe take a look at any you're interested in. If you have a group in mind or you want to come in solo and meet some new people, I definitely recommend those kinds of sources.
That is everything I wanted to ask you guys. Do you guys have anything else you would want to say to a prospective student listening in right now?
Yeah, just give it a try, honestly, because hackathons, as it turns out, are really beginner friendly, and you're not going to get like punished for trying. And it's not like, I guarantee you it won't be a waste of your time if you just give it a shot.
Yeah, hackathons are a really fun time, even if you work on the project and you don't end up submitting it for a review or submitting it like at the end of the competition or presenting it. Just working on that is a really good feeling, and seeing that, hey, even if you didn't complete it or didn't think for whatever reason that you would want to submit it, getting that knowledge and getting that experience of working on a project during a sprint or during this event is really valuable, and it's really just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Just if you've never done a hackathon before, don't be scared. Go ahead and just find any random hackathon, sign up. And I guarantee after the first one, it won't seem nearly as scary as you might have made it out to be. It's definitely an awesome event and something really fun to be a part of.
So, 100%. Sorry, I just have one more question that you brought up. You mentioned, I think, Daniel, that you don't have to submit your project at the end. What does that mean in terms of, you know, competitors? Like, can you just find out what the problem is and then work at it, and then no one has to know that you failed? Like,
so in a lot of hackathons, there is kind of a part at the end where judges will take a look at all of the projects, see what people have done. And sometimes if it's, especially if it's like an online hackathon, if you don't feel like submitting your project for any categories, you don't have to, really. There's no shame in doing it, right? Like even if you don't submit it, or if you do, just knowing that you achieved something or that you worked on a project is a really, really valuable thing. It's just a shame that some people, like a lot of the time, some competitors, especially newbies, will think like, oh, my project isn't good enough. It's not going to be, you know, up to par with all the other competitors. And it's an understandable feeling, right? Like maybe you've talked to other people and they're throwing around like a bunch of words like AI, they're throwing about or around like databases and whatever, right? But I don't think that should deter you from being proud of what you've done, especially if you're a beginner and you've never done a hackathon before. Getting your feet wet is a really valuable experience, and you should be proud to share what you've made.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like kind of adding on to what Daniel said, like no hackathon forces you to submit your project. And although like, you know, if you don't want to, you don't have to, I think it definitely is super valuable to just show what you have anyway. Like you put a lot of work into it, even if it's, you know, if you think it's not as impressive as what somebody else did, you know, show off what you did. It's cool regardless. And, you know, you don't have to win a hackathon to learn something and have fun.
Well, that's incredibly great to hear. Thank you guys so much for taking the time out of your day to speak with us. And I hope everyone listening will take part in a hackathon in the future. Hey there, What the Tech listener. Thank you so much for listening to the What the Tech podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Special thanks to Daniel, Ryan, and Tim for being our guests. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at @UofC_CPSC and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcast. Additionally, this is my final episode on the podcast, so thank you so much for the opportunity to host this show with Kelsey. It was an amazing experience, and I hope I have helped you learn something along the way. Kelsey will be back with more episodes soon, but for now, goodbye from me.